Pride Is Not the Word by Hair Crescendo, read by Sun Kitten Shash. Summary. Iroh's phone rings. He doesn't recognize the number, but he answers anyway. Hello? For a few moments, all Iroh can hear is shallow, raggedy breathing on the other end of the line. Then finally, he can hear a hoarse, familiar voice that he hasn't heard in years. Uncle Iroh, I need your help. Can you come pick me up? Or, Iroh wasn't prepared for another child, but the universe hasn't ever cared about that. Chapter 1. Iroh's phone rings. He doesn't recognize the number, but he answers anyway. Hello? For a few moments, all Iroh can hear is shallow, raggedy breathing on the other end of the line. Then finally, he can hear a hoarse, familiar voice he hasn't heard in years. Uncle Iroh, I need your help. Can you come pick me up? Iroh hasn't seen his nephew since his sister-in-law passed away and his brother bundled up his children, changed his number, and left. He regrets a lot of things, but losing track of those two kids is at the top of the list, right underneath Luten, who he still can't talk about. He hasn't seen Zuko in years, but that doesn't stop him from bolting out of his house like it's on fire, fumbling with his keys, and racing for the address that Zuko gave him. Across town. He's been so close, and Iroh never knew. Iroh doesn't know what he expects when he parks, illegally, on the side of the road, and this is where Zuko told him to go. But all that's here is a dingy alley with some trash cans and an atmosphere of abandonment. And also a kid, he realizes belatedly, tall and gangly and with his hood up over his face, crouching next to the trash cans. Zuko looks terrible. If Iroh hadn't been looking for a child, he never would have seen him, and under any other circumstances, he never would have recognized Zuko. The boy still has dark hair and the gold eyes that run in their family. But that's where the similarities end with the boy in Iroh's memories. Zuko, he breathes quietly. I'm here, Zuko. The boy looks up and looks, for just a second, very much like the feral cat that lived under Iroh's front porch for months until it had disappeared and not come back. Despite being the one who had called for help in the first place, Zuko doesn't approach, just stares at Iroh with that wide-eyed, disbelieving look. You came, he says finally. His voice is raspy, like he's either been screaming or silent for too long. Of course I came. You called for me. Iroh takes a step closer and immediately stops, because Zuko skitters backwards, plastering himself against the wall of the alley. Zuko, Iroh says, eyeing Zuko's defensive posture and seeing how his hands shake. Zuko shoves them into his pockets. It's late and it's dark. Come with me, please. I'm parked right here. The boy doesn't move. I'm going to go get in the car. I'm not going to go anywhere. I'll just wait for you. You can follow me. Iroh walks back to his car and gets back into the driver's seat and waits. For a good while, he thinks that he's made a mistake in backing off. Zuko called him for help. But Iroh remembers that cat, and remembers that it had disappeared after he'd made the mistake of trying to touch it. The moment his fingers had touched scruffy, ratty fur, the cat had yowled as if in pain and bolted. That had been the last Iroh had seen of it. If his nephew is anything like that cat, pushing him will be a mistake. It's a mistake that Iroh will not risk making. He sits in silence and waits for several minutes, and then in the side mirror, he sees a gangly shadow approaching the car. Zuko opens the door on the passenger side and slides into the seat, immediately slumping forward and burying his face in his arms. Iro takes the time to get a better look at him now that he's not shadowed away in an alley, and isn't reassured at all. The boy's rail thin, and his clothes are a mess, too big and very ratty and a little stained, and he still won't slide the hood off his head. "Zuko," he says, softly, "please look at me. I want to help you." Zuko laughs, if it could be called a laugh at all, considering that it turns into something closer to a sob instead, and finally yanks his hood down. Iro sees his face, unobscured for the first time, and audibly gasps. Zuko flinches hard, but doesn't look away, and glares as if daring Iro to judge him. Iro feels nothing even remotely in the ballpark of judgment, just heartbreak and a flicker, deep down, of rage. "Who did that to your face?" he manages to ask. "Nobody," Zuko says shortly. "It was an accident." There's no way that something like that happens by accident. The scar covers nearly a quarter of the boy's face, circles fully around his eye, and stretches backward like the shape of the flame that made it. It's an old mark, but not that old. No kid, but especially not this kid, procures a mark like that by accident. Zuko's hand is on the handle of the door, ready to bolt if he feels he needs to. Iroh's head and heart scream for answers, but he has the sense to squash them down. Zuko's hand is on the handle of the door, and Iroh knows, just from looking at him, that he will run if he gets pushed. So Iroh lets him, for the time being, keep his secrets for the sake of keeping him safe and here, in this car, with him. Iroh starts the car. The air conditioner turns on, and despite that it's a warm night, Zuko shivers and curls in on himself. Iroh doesn't call attention to it, but simply turns the air off and the heater on. He doesn't ask Zuko any questions, but wordlessly pulls into the drive-thru of the closest McDonald's on the way back to his home, orders a few cheeseburgers and some fries. He hands the bag over, and Zuko doesn't touch it. "Please," Iroh says gently. "We still have a bit of a drive. You'll feel better if you eat something." Iroh didn't notice before, but Zuko is clutching a threadbare backpack in a white-knuckled grip. It's been duct-taped more than once. Zuko watches him suspiciously for a few moments more, and then stuffs a hand into the bag to pull out a cheeseburger. He has 1,000 questions, and enjoys exactly none of them. He has 1,000 questions, and every single one of them will keep for a night. Iroh is nothing if not patient, and Zuko looks exhausted and worn out, like a particularly hard breeze will blow him over. He needs rest, and Iroh needs a game plan. And he has a feeling that whatever answers Zuko has for him, he's not going to like any of them. How did the boy get to this point? Why does he look like he's been living in a ditch for a year instead of with his father and sister? What happened to his face? Zuko nearly falls asleep in the car, but doesn't, catches himself every single time he dozes off or leans for too long on the cool glass of the window, and it's not long before Iroh's pulling into the driveway and putting the car into park. The fast food bag's a small, crumpled ball in Zuko's hands, and Iroh makes sure to get out of the car first. Zuko follows him warily, but unlike the feral cat, he walks inside when Iroh opens the door to let him in. He looks even worse in the light of the living room. Upstairs and to the left is a guest room and attached bath, Iroh tells him. You're welcome to sleep there. Or if you'd prefer the sofa. Without a word, Zuko bolts up the stairs, and Iroh hears a door slam. Then he's left, very suddenly, alone in the middle of his living room, in his home that has been empty for a very long time. Iroh doesn't know Zuko's story, and while he's eager to hear it, he has a distinct feeling that it doesn't end with asking for a ride back to Ozai's home. Iroh knows that he shouldn't, but mentally, he's already making a list of things he'll need to buy to properly accommodate a teenage boy. From upstairs, Iroh can hear water running, and allows himself to sit down on the sofa and rub his temples. The picture being painted for him is not a good one. None of Iroh's things will fit Zuko even a little bit, so despite the sharp jab of pain in his heart, Iroh makes himself open up one of the sealed boxes in the closet, pulls out a few of Luten's old t-shirts and bottoms that can be tied, leaves them on the guest bed. Zuko's brought his backpack into the bathroom with him. Is he afraid that Iroh's going to take it, or is it simply something that he does without thinking? Iroh goes back downstairs and brews himself a cup of tea and pretends that he's not listening intently for any noises coming from the room upstairs. The water shuts off, and then there's only silence. Iroh sips at his tea. The floorboards creak the tiniest bit, and Iroh looks up, just in time to see Zuko poke his head into the kitchen. He hovers in the doorway, like he's not sure he's allowed in, until Iroh beckons him to sit. Luten's old t-shirt is big on him. Come in, Zuko, he says softly. Sit down. The boy sits, and his hands twist anxiously in his lap. You wouldn't rather get some rest? You have questions, Zuko says, finally. He doesn't look up, staring instead into Iroh's teacup like it holds the secrets of the universe. His dark hair is damp and curling past his shoulders. Answering them later won't be any easier than it is now. His voice is flat and toneless, like he expects nothing to come from this. Expect nothing and you can't be disappointed, is what immediately comes to mind. And Iroh doesn't have to know him well to know that logic. He pours a cup for his nephew and passes it across the table. Zuko holds it instead of drinking it. I won't be here long, Zuko plows ahead, before Iroh can ask a single question from his very long list. I won't be any trouble, I promise. Just until I can figure some stuff out, then I'll be out of your hair. Zuko, Iroh interrupts. He makes a point to soften his voice, but Zuko flinches anyway. You're 12 years old. Where are you going to go?
Well, think of something, Zuko sputters. I've been fine, okay?
He trails off, and Iroh eyeballs him. How long have you been by yourself? It's the kindest way he knows how to ask. The only way he knows how, without accusations or making assumptions.
A year-ish, I think.
Where's your father?
Home, probably, Zuko replies, a surly note creeping into his voice. Happy to be finally fucking rid of me.
So where have you been staying? Zuko pointedly doesn't answer. That's answer enough for Iroh. Somehow he'd known, without even asking, where Zuko had been staying, and his nephew's non-answer said all it needed to. Zuko had been staying nowhere.
Why did you call me? Don't get me wrong, I'm happy to help you in any way that I can. But you haven't called since you moved.
And that hurts, too. Even though Iroh knows that the responsibility can't possibly be put on a child. But he doesn't understand why, of all people, Zuko would have called him. It's unfathomable that there would be no one else. Surely there had been someone else. Why me?
I didn't.
Zuko fidgets in his chair and rotates his cup in front of him, just as he used to when he was little and put on the spot.
I couldn't think of anyone else. And I remembered your phone number. It was the only one I could remember.
Okay, Iroh says softly. Okay.
Okay.
You know, I've been very lonesome since the loss of my son. The house is too big for just myself. He looks over across the table at Zuko wearing Luten's old clothes. His heart hurts, but not in the same way that he'd expected it to. He can see the dark mark of a bruise peeking out from the neckline of Zuko's shirt, and another on the other side, coming out the bottom of his sleeve. It looks like a set of handprints. Iroh feels sick to his stomach.
You don't have to worry about leaving, Iroh says. Just please be honest with me. Why are you here and not at home with your family?
Zuko's face shudders, and for a while, Iroh thinks he's not going to answer. It's a surprise, then, when he finally speaks.
Father and I had a fight. He asked me to do something, and I wouldn't do it. So I left. He didn't look for me, so I guess he couldn't have cared that much.
He looks up and glares. What's it matter, anyway? I'm fine. I was fine, okay? Quick as a flash, Iroh reaches out and presses a fingertip into the blue-black mark on Zuko's left arm. He doesn't push down hard, but the boy flinches anyway, recoiling back and nearly throwing himself out of the chair.
You may be many things, but I very much doubt that you are fine, Iroh says.
His voice is harder than he means it to be.
He can't handle the look of hurt betrayal that washes over Zuko's face, and he gets up, grabbing a bag of frozen vegetables out of the freezer. You called me, Zuko, because you needed help. I want to help you in any way I can, but I can't do that if you keep insisting that you're fine. We both know that you are not. Show me, please.
Zuko's face goes surly, but he obeys, pulling off Luten's too-big shirt. Iroh was right. He hates it. A set of matching handprints wrap around Zuko's upper arms, and there's a fresh, blackening bruise stretching over his collarbone, another blossoming vast and vivid over his ribs. The kid is a rainbow of injury.
Where did you get those? Someone wanted something I didn't want to give them. Had it out, I stole their phone and ran for it, called you. That's it, okay? That's it.
Iroh squashes down the roar of fury in his ears, but can't manage to keep the look off of his face well enough, because Zuko pales and shoves his hands underneath the table. He's very, very still, and very, very quiet. Iroh sips at his tea until he doesn't hear the ocean in his ears. As he settles, so does his nephew. Zuko shrugs the shirt back on and thrusts the offered bag of frozen peas into it. Iroh spends a solid minute deep breathing until he can speak without shouting.
This is important, Zuko, and I need you to listen to me very carefully.
The boy looks up. His eyes huge and liquid gold.
I don't want to hear anything about getting out of my hair again. Do you understand? I've missed you very much, and I'm very glad to see you, and I'd like for you to stay here.
Iroh is, generally speaking, not a man of impulse. He thinks carefully and deliberately, and doesn't make decisions he hasn't weighed out in his mind. He may have known Zuko at one point, but he cannot say that he truly knows him now. It's been such a long time, and the boy who sits in front of him now is nothing like the cheerful child he remembers. The scar on his face does not help. Looking at him now, looking angry and wary, and so very ready to make a run for it if he has to, Iroh could never turn him away. It's clear that Zuko is desperate, at the end of his rope, and is out of options. Iroh may have been Zuko's last resort, but it's just as clear that he was also his only resort. Iroh reaches across the table and touches his hand to the back of Zuko's palm. You always have a place here with me. Zuko does a good job of maintaining his flat expression till something in him cracks. His lower lip gives a stubborn tremble. He doesn't cry, but his eyes go wet and glassy, and when he drops his head into his arms on the table, the only sound that comes out of him is a gasping little whine, like he's forgotten how to breathe. Iroh desperately wants to hug him, but doesn't dare. He forces himself to stay where he is, and lets Zuko ride out his feelings. The most he dares is to reach across the table and rub his hand over Zuko's dark head. Even that small touch makes him jerk. Zuko doesn't rebuff him, however, just plasters himself to the table and lets it happen, until gradually the horrible little smothered sobs settle into shakes. You're exhausted, Iroh says softly. I think you've had enough interrogation for one night. Go upstairs and get some sleep. We'll talk more in the morning. Zuko seems relieved to be released, and heads for the stairs so fast that Iroh's sure he's just going to run for it, like he did earlier. And then he stops abruptly. Zuko turns back to look Iroh in the eyes, twists his hand in the hem of his shirt, and fidgets. Thank you, is what spills out of him in the end. Thank you for answering. Thank you for coming. I didn't think that you would, but I'm glad that you did. And then he makes that run for it, before Iroh can say a word. Iroh only hears him take a few stares before it all slips into silence. He can, just barely if he really focuses, make it out when the door of the upstairs bedroom clicks shut. It's then, and only then, that he lets himself drop his head into his hands. Wonder what the hell he thinks he's doing. Zuko had been expecting, maybe at most, a sofa for a day or so, and that was if he was lucky. To be entirely honest, Zuko doesn't even remember calling Uncle Iroh. He remembers hands that wouldn't stop touching and fighting tooth and nail to make them stop. And the next thing he knows, he's coming back to his body behind a trash can in that alley, being coaxed into a car by his uncle. Zuko sits down on the bed and buries his face in his hands, tries to stop shaking. To calm himself, he goes through the contents of his backpack. A few packets of dried ramen noodles, one of them half-eaten, an extra shirt he'd swiped out of the donation bin a few weeks back, some bits and bobs that for some reason still have sentimental value, a knife, and the flash drive, the catalyst for all of this misery. Zuko rolls it between his fingers, just to confirm that it's really there, and crawls under the bed to rip a small hole in the lining underneath, and slips the drive up into the box springs. For a good few minutes, he just stays there, breathing hard into the carpet, hating how under the bed feels so much safer than being on top. He can do this. Worst comes to worst, he stays a day or two to get his shit together, and then he bails and Uncle never has to see him again. Zuko knows better than to think, even for a second, that he's safe. Safe gets ripped away in a heartbeat, every time, and he knows better than to trust in it. Safety isn't a thing that ever lasts. Not for him. This room is too big and too open, and Zuko wants to like it, but he hates it. Doesn't matter if he likes it. It's better than sleeping outside. Except that it's not. Zuko tries his best. He crawls underneath the covers and wraps himself up like a burrito, but he can't calm down. Anxiety buzzes hard underneath his skin. He can't do this. If someone breaks in, or something happens and he needs to run, Zuko is absolutely screwed. So even though he's sure that wearing shoes in bed is going to be frowned upon, he toes on his sneakers anyway and tries again. Still no good. He feels exposed and unprotected, even bundled up in blankets. Zuko eventually gets up and bodily shoves the bed flush into the corner of the room, getting back in and pressing his back against the wall. It's weird to be comfortable. So weird, it's almost painful. Zuko's body doesn't remember what it feels like to not be fighting with his environment. It's so much worse now. The air conditioning should be comfortable. The bed should be comfortable. Being clean and properly dry for the first time in what feels like forever should be comfortable. But it's not. Stubbornly, Zuko closes his eyes and pulls the blankets tighter around himself. He doesn't think he'll ever fall asleep. But he does, eventually, wrapped up tightly and curled into the smallest ball he can manage. Zuko sleeps deeply, so deeply that he doesn't wake when Iroh cracks the door to check in on him. He doesn't so much as stir when the man approaches, reaching out a quiet hand to brush Zuko's bangs out of his face to eyeball the scar stretching into his hairline. If he was awake, it would have made him uncomfortable to be the focus of such scrutiny. But Zuko is not awake enough to notice, much less be uncomfortable, and he keeps sleeping. Iroh closes the door behind him.